Hi, this is Gurusi Singh and you're listening to my Thick Accent Podcast. So in today's remarkable installment, we have the honor of exploring the inspiring journey of a true adventurer, a multi-talented, a lifelong learner, creative storyteller, and host of the renowned podcast Immigrants of Toronto. From bidding farewell to his beloved, vibrant Mexico City to embarking on a new chapter in Canada and how he navigated the unfamiliar terrain, overcame obstacles, and embraced the opportunities that awaited him. His story is a testament to the indomitable spirit of immigrants and the impact of community support. Let's dive into his creative journey, explore the power of storytelling, and discover the profound impact of sharing immigrant narratives, and why frozen pizza tasted better than any pizza at one point in his immigrant journey. Please welcome Oscar Cecina.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Absolutely, it's an honor to have you. Like I said, Oscar, I was always proud of this conversation. So let me start by asking you your question, which you usually ask your guests, which was that if money wasn't an issue, what would you be? And in 2021, I know that you said that if I could have everything I have at LinkedIn, but instead of talking to clients, I could spend my time writing either a novel or just Dungeons and Dragons adventures. So what would you be in 2023 today?
I think it's still the same. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If I could still have like the, at LinkedIn is, I think it's a great company. Mm-hmm. And, there's a lot of things that we can do there. For example, I just took on the leadership of the Embrace ERG in Toronto, which is the idea is to embrace all cultures and all those things. And if I could have everything that I have there, but instead of doing client work, I could be able to write and play Dungeons and Dragons and on any tabletop RPG, I would do that 100%.
Okay.
It's still the same answer, yeah.
Okay. I think you are sort of doing that, right, with your second podcast. Is that so?
Yeah. Actually, you mentioned that I'm the host of the Immigrants of Toronto podcast. I actually stopped recording that one about a year and a half ago, like a year ago, mm-hmm. almost. After 100 episodes, I just thought it was time to move into something else. And I recently just started a new podcast that's called Why We Write Fantasy. And the goal is to kind of like give our take on what fantasy means for us, like how we write it, what do we do to write it, how do we want mm-hmm. to use it to tell different stories, maybe dive into certain difficult topics that, like, for example, you can see them in the news and then you're going to get upset. But if you read about that in a fantasy or sci-fi novel, it might just pique your interest and helps you understand how the world works, like social and economically and politically and everything. So that's kind of the idea. So it's a new thing, completely different to my previous one. But I'm excited. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely sounds very fascinating. And how you got interested into that, let's just talk about that. Let me take you back to Mexico, where you grew up. Tell us a little bit about your formative years and what were you doing before you moved?
I was a project manager, an IT project manager back in Mexico. It actually, like, I have a degree in computer engineering. And I was a developer, then I moved to project management. And kind of like the career evolved then. But by the time I was in Mexico, I moved here 10 years ago. I was an IT project manager. I was working for an international company, which is pretty big. I actually mm-hmm. moved to Spain for a few months to work on a project there. Then I went back and then I moved to Canada to try my luck, I guess. But back then I was, I think I'd say my life was pretty normal. I was married to my wife. We got married 15 years ago. It was, I would say it was kind of normal. Like you wake up, you go to work, you come back, you meet with your friends, your family and those things. But, I would say it was a pretty normal, boring, standard class life.
No, but tell me a little bit about, you know, your childhood probably, or what the focus was on growing up, or just the family environment, because I feel like that really impacts your later years of life. Tell us about that a little bit.
So I grew up in a very progressive family, and I think I'm always very thankful to do that. Mm-hmm. Like, my mom has 5 sisters, no brothers, and mm-hmm. I grew up always with the like the idea of like feminism was a big thing. So my mom and my aunts, they all grew up in the 60s and 70s with all the feminist movement. So that was something that stayed with them. And seeing, like, growing up, seeing very successful women around me kind of gave mm-hmm. me the idea that, I mean, that was normal, right? Like, there was no issue. Like, it was very ingrained in me that I would never discriminate anyone because based on gender or anything like that. And I guess also fortunate yeah. because my dad was the same. Like, I would never see him talking to my mom and saying that he was better than her because of XX and he was a man. Mm. Never, ever. So I think growing up in that type of family, it gave me some, I would say it gave me all the background and the, I would say the fundamental principles that I live by today.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different. Like, I think I guess that's why I don't have kids. Like, we grew up in a very, very, I would say very progressive. So we knew about the issues of, I don't know, like, what's going on with the world. Like, mm-hmm. every time there was, even when I was a kid, if we had a family gathering, most of the talking with the adults were talking. I was a kid. I was trying to play. And sometimes I wanted to feel like a grown up. So I went and sat with them to listen to what they were saying. And it was usually about politics. And it was not only ranting about politics. It was like the analysis of the government and the analysis mm-hmm. of what was happening in the world. And my grandfather, he was a very very smart and wise man. So he always knew what was going on. And he was always able to go back and reference things that happened in the past, like all the history. Like, oh, yeah, this is because in 1931, this happens. Like, oh, I find that fascinating. So I grew up with all this, all the environment. So I started getting a lot of interest in history and literature and all that. So it kind of gave me the basis what my life is today. Like, I just start to understand, like, something comes up and it's different to what I believe. And maybe I was never exposed to this back in Mexico. Mm-hmm. Instead of dismissing it as if it's not something that shouldn't happen or anything, I just tried to understand it and tried to get an idea of what is this and why is it important for this other person. So, yeah, that's kind of what my childhood was. But the thing is that the Mexican society doesn't work like that. So I always say that I grew up in a bubble, because once I moved out of the world and it's like, yeah, okay, I'm gonna see what's going on. I don't know. I got the feeling that I didn't belong.
Okay.
Because it was a very patriarchal society, which is something different to the way I grew up. Like, I grew up around women and strong and powerful women. And I go to work, and then I realize that one of my colleagues, which is smarter than me, she works harder than me, she didn't get the promotion, but I get it. And that's because our boss was a little, let's say, misogynistic. So it's like getting into those things later in my life, it just shocked me a little bit. Like this is not, I don't belong here. This is not how I grew up. These are not the values that I live by. So what's happening?
You actually answered like my next question, which I was about to ask, that at one point you felt like, oh, I grew up in an environment where women were always empowered, and you know, feminism was the word of my conversations here and there. So what time it happened? You did say that, yes, it was during your, you know, corporate experience probably. So how did you navigate that? How did you kind of process that, or did that impact the further years after that?
I think it did in a way. I think the problem is that when I was working in a corporate job back in Mexico, and things were happening like that, I don't think I had the wisdom or even the strength. Like, I was in my 20s, so to stand up and tell my boss, you know what you're doing is BS. I'm not with it. I was just thinking about like, oh, I need to pay rent, I need to pay my bills, and this is the system. So okay, just let's go through it. I'm upset, but it's hard to go out of my way if I cannot feed myself. So I think it's I'm a little ashamed of that part, but I think it's part of growing up. Like I was in my 20s, it was like 20 years ago. I'm 45 now. So all the wisdom and the things that happened back then, if I had all the knowledge and all the, even the confidence of saying, I don't think this is correct, I think I would have done it. Like I would do it today. I didn't do it back then. I was just immature and all that, but it's part of growing up, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure you must be having other things to kind of focus on, maybe your career or like you said, with the rent and the job.
Yeah.
You know? And you kind of went into the flow of things happening and concentrated on minding your own business.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to go back to the Mexico point once again. Tell me something that people don't know about Mexico that you would like to share.
Huh. Okay. Wow. Okay. I'm thinking that this is, lately I've talked to a lot of people who want to go to Mexico City to visit and all that. Yeah. And I think one of the things that people might not know, especially in North America and maybe Europe, which like racism is different. The Mexican society is racist in a way. It's more like a caste system than actual the color of your skin. But if you like, nobody really talks a lot about that. And I think it's because it's not like if you go to the States and you think about racism, like the racism they have there is it's pretty terrible. Like it's just really bad. And even in Canada, we have some type of racism against either the Black community or the Asian community, especially with COVID and all that.
Yeah.
In Mexico, you cannot see it like that. Like nobody, but you won't see like an indigenous person in the street and then another person would start yelling, like, go back to your state or go out, get out of the city. That would never happen in the city. So that's what some people don't think the Mexican society is racist in that way. But it's all this systemic racism that we have and this caste system that you know that if you are indigenous or if you come from like indigenous background, then your opportunities are limited. Just to give you an idea, like the when we're applying for a job, I don't know if it's still happening now. Honestly, I moved out 10 years ago, but 10 years ago, we still put our photos in our resume. And most of the time, you could get dismissed by just the way you look like. So I never had that issue because like half of my family is from Spain and the other half is from Japan. So I don't really have indigenous roots, but it pisses me off that someone that looks like me is just going to have another opportunity when someone that is smarter, harder worker and everything will not get it just because the way they look like. And that's 10 years ago. I know society has evolved and all that, but it's one of the things that I want to mention. But that's kind of like a bad thing. I think a good thing that Mexico has that maybe people don't know is I know people like street food, and when people go to Mexico City, they usually ask me like, where should I eat? And they usually ask for restaurants. Mm-hmm. And if you're in Mexico City, you're just walking around. There's a taco spots like on the sidewalk. If there's people there, it's good. So it's I love street food. So I would tell people who haven't never been in Mexico City that if you want to go there just to visit, make sure that you eat some street food. It's just I think it's the best I ever tasted. And there's so much. If you see a taco place that is packed and then one on the side that doesn't have that many people, maybe it's more convenient to go there because you're going to get your food faster. But trust me, go where the people are. Like, that's where you're going to get the best food.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, Oscar, when you were talking about Mexico, it didn't feel like you're talking about Mexico for me. It felt like you were talking about India, except the taco part, because talking about, you know, the caste system and sort of the racism and something that you said, that it's just there. It just exists. And I think I'm not alien to that thing as well. I will not disagree that it does not exist in India from the, you know, differentiating from the colors of skin or to having photographs on the resume and not hiring and all those experiences and caste system. It does exist in India. But I would say the only thing which I have experienced in the past 5 years since I am here and talking to people here and when visiting back to India as well, that yes, the education has specifically closed that gap. And I'm happy about that, that it has definitely helped in making the country grow a little bit. And obviously, the second thing you said, the food. Yes, I would never recommend anybody to go into those fanciest restaurants or food chains. They exist all around the world. Go to the street food, try the local street food. Nothing beats that for sure.
Yeah. Actually, there's a book that I read, I think it was last year. It's called Caste, and it's the author is Isabel Wilkerson. And she talks mostly about the caste system in the US. Mm-hmm. She compares it with the caste system in India.
Okay.
And when I was reading it, it's like, this is the same thing we have in Mexico. It's very, very easy. It's a really good, book. I have it somewhere over here, but it kind of explains very easily in a very, very straightforward way how the caste system was built and why it works, why it hasn't changed, why it works. So yeah, I'm just like a random recommendation.
Yeah. Well, I hope it definitely changes and it works for the betterment of the country for sure. Okay. Tell me something, Oscar, that something from your Mexican culture or traditions that have stayed with you even after you moved to Canada.
I think that one's easy. The Day of the Dead, it's something that it's very important in Mexico. Even though I'm not religious, I don't believe in the afterlife or anything like that. Mm-hmm. The fact that we dedicate a day where we set up this altar that we call ofrenda in Spanish, when we do that is to honor the dead and to give them what they kind of like, the things that they like. So I don't know if someone was helping. And I don't know if let's say someone who liked tacos, for example. We're talking about street food, so someone who liked tacos, they really liked it. And then during that period, we go to the graveyard, and in the tombstone we put some tacos on that, and we have a meal with the dead. So it's kind of one of the things that I like. I mean, here I can't because all my loved ones are who have passed away are in Mexico, but it's kind of that idea, and it's something that has stayed with me.
Let's pivot towards your journey to Canada. Mm-hmm. First of all, tell me, when was the first time you heard about Canada and what brought you to Canada?
I heard about Canada in school, like when we were learning geography and all that, but Canada was never really studied in school. Like we focus mostly on like Mexican history and the things in Mexico. Also maybe a little bit on Europe and the wars, like
the
war,
French Revolution, Russian
all
Revolution,
those things, exactly,
those,
maybe a little bit on the States. Like we learned that they had an independence, so that was kind of like the one test question. But Canada never really figured in school, so it was mostly like you look at this amazing pictures of the Rocky Mountains, like Banff and Lake Louise, all those things. It's like, this looks beautiful. Like, I want to leave there because it looks amazing. But what happened with me was when I finished high school, I took a couple of years off to work and like do other things. And then when I was going to get into university, someone told me, it's like, hey, have you ever thought about going to like university in Canada? Mm-hmm. It's like, I mean, no, I never thought about it because, why would I? Then I started looking at it, and it was really expensive for me at the time. So I was like, this is impossible for me. But it kind of like planted the seed on like Canada as a destination, as a living destination. And then when I met my wife, one day we were talking about it and they said like, hey, you know what? I always wanted to go to university in Canada or something like that. And she said, okay. she came to Toronto when she was 14 and she remembered that trip very, I think it was very, very close to her heart, like the trip and everything. And what she did was like, you know what? I've always wanted to move to Canada. It's like, for real? Like, yeah, when I was 14, I loved it. And I always wanted to move to that country. And because I always wanted to as well, we just said, like, you want to start looking into moving? Would it be something that you'd be interested in? And fortunately, we both liked the idea. So we started thinking about it. And that was, I would say, 2010, maybe a couple of years after we got married. And then we started looking into the process, like, what do we need to do? All that. So it took us about 2.5 years to finally get, because we were applying to permanent residency, but I was 35 back then. Well, 33 when we started looking at the process. We're looking at, there was a different process than it is today. There was no express entry, nothing like that. You needed to get into one of the, kind of like the slots that they have, depending on your education and everything. And that year, somehow they removed the IT category. Yeah, the category, but there was just a specific way. They removed that category, so I couldn't apply. So we started thinking about what do we do. The agency we were working with, they said like, "Hey, you can apply through Quebec. So you only need to learn French. So
only
yes, it is, yeah." So my wife and I, we started learning French, and we took French classes for about a year and a half. We passed the test, and they submitted it, like the agency submitted it. It's like, hey, I have good, one day they called us, like, I have great news and bad news. Like, oh, crap. So I went there. It's like, hey, okay, tell me the good news. The good news is that you were approved for the application in Quebec. The bad news is it's going to take a couple of years for you to get the interview. And at the time, the political situation in Mexico was really, we were really upset with that. Like the party that had been in power for like 100 years before was returning to power. And it was kind of like, it's going to be the same again. Like, we don't want to live in a country that is governed by that party. So, so I asked like, hey, do you have any alternatives? It's like, hey, you can come as a student. Like, fine. Okay. Yeah. And yeah, that's why we decided to. I kind of lost the coin toss, and I had to study. I don't like school, so I had to study human resources for a bit, and then so that was 10 years ago when the kind of like when the journey started, like the immigration journey started.
So then in April 2013, I believe you landed.
Yes.
Yeah. So tell us about your first day, just exactly when you landed, the initial impressions and your thoughts.
So we landed in the morning, like before noon. We got into the airport and I don't know, like I couldn't, like part of me couldn't believe that we were doing that. And the other part was like, this doesn't feel real, something like that.
Okay.
We stayed at a guest house. In Bloor and I think it was Bloor and Sherbourne type of area. There was a small guest house, so we paid there for a week while we were looking for an apartment to rent. And that day we went to a small, I don't remember the restaurant, but it was like a small restaurant, like a pub style. We got some food. Then we walked around the downtown to kind of like get to know the city.
Yeah.
And again, I was still like, I don't believe like this is really happening. But as the days went by and then we had to sign the lease for the apartment and everything, it just became more real than the beginning. But the beginning, I think my feeling was, I just don't believe that we're actually doing this.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, I also heard you say in one of your podcasts, obviously, that I'm not of a plan B guy. I'm more of like a plan A guy. So you're saying that your plan A was to move to Canada, and if it did not work, you'll think about something else or not? What was that about?
So, so I think usually what happens is that I set a goal, and I'm okay changing the plan, like how I'm going to get to that goal, but the goal rarely changes, especially when it's as big as moving to another country.
Mm-hmm.
So I think at the time our goal was like, we're going to move to Canada. And let's say our first plan was to go through the permanent residency through Ontario.
Yeah.
It didn't work. Then Quebec, it didn't work. Then the student, that worked. So it's more like, this is where we're going to get to. It just doesn't matter how we do it. We're just going to get there. But to answer your question, I didn't really have another goal set or any other plan. Like it was like, we already did this. We're moving to Canada and we're just going to make it work. That's it. Like not even going back to Mexico was never an option for us.
I've heard these people saying that when you have a plan B, you always know there's a cushion to fall on and you might not give you 100% to the plan A.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the mentality you are kind of moving with.
Yeah. Right? I'm kind of like a black and white person, like either go all in or I don't do it at all. So I think in this case was more like, I'm going all in. We sold everything that we had in Mexico. We put everything in our bank account. We had a couple of suitcases that we arrived with, and that was our life. Wasn't even a consideration, like going back, like what for, like, no, we're not doing this.
You did talk about, you know, going back to school in your mid-30s, and I'll tell you something, in India, like, it's not that common to have a classmate who's a decade older than you.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, things are changing now, and you have people of all ages, you know, going back to school and doing various programs and everything. So how was for you like at this age, you're going back to school, and how was the experience like, or just like to the point where the differences in the cultural education or even general education?
Yeah, I mean, surprisingly, I wasn't the oldest person in the classroom.
I'm sure, yeah.
But I was, I think, the second one or something like that. But okay. I would say that 90% of them were in their 20s, like early 20s, studying human resources, starting a career and all that. And in my case, it was like, well, I already had a career. Like, I started working when I was 20 in IT. I stopped and I'm starting human resources. So I think the approach was different. In my case, my goal was, first of all, to finish this so I can get my work permit and I can start working. And also, I think the case is because we moved here with our savings. I knew that I wasn't able to go, I don't know, like out and with them as friends.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I went out with them maybe a couple of times during the whole year that I was studying there. Like, I wanted to save money. Also, like, the things that we're doing, like, that we're going to go to a club. It's like, yeah, I went there like 10 years ago. I'm not going back. This is not me. I think the main thing that happened is that I was really insecure when we got there, especially about my English.
Hmm.
Even though I was working for Verizon in the States. Back in Mexico, I was a contractor for Verizon for a couple of years, and I was speaking English all day with them. I never felt confident to do it. So I think that was one of the things that I noticed when I got there. Like, it's like, hey, now it's back then. Like, I was like posted in Mexico City, but I was working for Verizon. So I had a call with one of my colleagues. I would put my headphones on, talk in English, hang up, and then turn around to my friends in Spanish. Hey, let's go out for lunch. And so my whole life was in Spanish with a few things in English. When I moved here, it was the opposite. It was like, okay, now my whole life is in English.
Mm.
So it took me a while to kind of like come to terms that I have an accent. My English is not perfect. And I just have to live with it. Like, it's either that or I'm never going to speak to anyone.
Hmm.
So it was like, you know what, let's do it. And and I started like forcing myself to speak more English than Spanish and everything. I even went, like I told you, like I'm an all or nothing type of guy. So even my wife makes fun of me because when we got here, I told her like, I don't want to have any Spanish speaking friends. because I know that if I find someone in Spanish, yeah, I'm going to gravitate to them, and then I will never force myself to learn this language that I need to learn if I want to be successful in this country.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I forced that. Like every person that I met was in English, even though maybe some of them, English wasn't their first language. Mm-hmm. They didn't know Spanish, so we had to communicate in English. So
yeah,
forcing myself to do that, I think it helped me a lot with the confidence and with the understanding that nobody really cares. Like as long as they understand what you're saying, nobody cares if you used a verb incorrectly or if you have an accent. As long as they understand you, they're happy. Because they're more,
absolutely,
they're more, and I guess this is part of like, as humans, we care about the message, like what it means, not actually if it's written or spoken properly. So
yeah, exactly.
I think that kind of like opened my eyes.
And I've also heard you say, again, one of your podcasts, I consumed a lot, and you said that in Canada, you can get along with broken English,
yes,
as long as you can put your point forward. Yeah.
That's one of the things I learned. Like I never thought about it. I thought I had to be, my English had to be perfect. And because it wasn't perfect, I was very kind of like self-conscious. Like, hey, I don't need to. Or sometimes I thought really hard on what am I going to say and how am I going to say it. And by the time I said it, it was completely irrelevant because the conversation had moved on. So it kind of like opened my eyes to like, yeah, as long as I get my point across, I'm okay.
There was another anecdote I heard where you said that you were walking with somebody, some classmate of yours, or maybe a friend of yours, and you went to a corner and he just went away.
Yeah.
And you were kind of left questioning that, what just happened? Tell me about that.
It was funny because I think it was one of the, I don't know, maybe the first couple of months at school. And my wife started working. So I was walking towards my wife's job to pick her up. And one of my friends was like, hey, I'm walking that direction. So let's go together. And we're having a conversation. And and then we got to the subway entrance. And it's like, hey, this is my stop, take care. Like in the middle of the conversation, I was like, what just happened? And especially because I come from a culture that when you're talking to someone, and even if it's your stop, you finish the conversation.
Yeah.
Or sometimes it's just a good conversation. Like, you know what? Let's grab a beer. Let's grab a coffee.
Or sometimes you start a second topic at the same time.
And then, and you never know. And it's like, it's 10 p.m. Okay, I think I need to get home. But here was like kind of a, I just found it funny because like our conversation was going normally as I would expect it. But for me, the flow would have to be different. Mm. Like based on what I learned, the flow is that you get to your corner, we stop because you need to go the other way. I need to go straight. We finish what we're saying, we shake hands, hug, and take care. That's kind of what we would do it in Mexico. Mm. So here, not even shaking hands, just like raising his hand. It's like, hey, this is my stop, take care. That's a different culture thing. And I think that was part of the culture shock that we had when we moved here. But that anecdote is pretty funny.
When was the moment, Oscar, you felt like we're talking about the language, right? You were hesitant in English. And then, so when was the moment you felt like, okay, now I feel comfortable in the language, which further led you to start the podcast, right? When was that moment?
You know what? I don't think I still feel comfortable with the language. I think it was more like, thought that, you know what, I just want to do it. I'm just going to do it. That's it. Like, what's the worst thing that can happen? But there's a couple of things that helped me. I think, first of all, I joined Toastmasters, and that helped me a lot to get a sense of not like whatever I'm saying makes sense, and kind of like gave me confidence to, you have an audience, you have 20, 30 people sitting in front of you, and you need to deliver a 5-7 minute speech, and you need to keep them entertained. So what do you do? And you need to keep them entertained, they need to understand you. So it kind of forced me to take that step. It's like, you know what, I just need to do it. But recently I started speech therapy because I still want to improve. So I think Toastmasters helped me the first year, the second a little bit more. But then after that, for me, it was like, I think I got everything I should get from Toastmasters, and I'm done. I need something else. And that's when I like looked into speech therapy and finding a way to get better at speaking. But as you said, like, I still don't feel that my English is perfect. I don't think I will ever feel that. I don't even feel that with Spanish. But there's a moment when you say, like, you know what? Let's just do it. That's it. Like, nobody cares. And I think that was the sense.
And I think it's absolutely normal to feel that. You don't have to be an expert in it. Or I think I can speak for myself also. You know, I speak like three languages and I'm on the verge of learning the fourth, which is like French. So it's like, there's no way I can be right. an expert in all of these. There's not possibility. You know, yeah. There's so much my mind can, what's the word, like preserve?
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Okay, is there this another point I learned that you were reluctant to buy winter boots for the longest time? Tell me, yes. Why is that?
I basically was stupid. I think that's I don't know if you can put that in the show, but I think the main reason was that they were expensive, and we were living on savings, and I was studying. I wasn't making a dime, like, because you can't work when you have a student permit, so. It was like, I don't want to spend money there. Like, I'm sure that I'm going to be able to do it with sneakers, and I'm just going to walk. It was like five blocks away. Like, my college was five blocks away. I was like, I think I can just make it like that. And it took me until, I think, almost Christmas time when the snow, it was a really snowy winter, that one, like in 2013. And it was when one day that I was walking around and the snow was pretty high, so my sneakers got wet, and I felt like my feet were going to fall off my body. Yeah. So I think that was the time when I said, you know what, I think I need winter boots. But it was just mainly just like stupidity. What's the reason why I didn't buy them?
Yeah. Okay, so you can call it stupidity, but I think that's the... instant, I would say, the reaction or the behavior that one kind of falls into when you are new to the country, including myself. You know, I think I was also hesitant to buy certain clothes or certain things which might be helpful for me, which might keep me warm. But I was like, no, that's pretty expensive. I can't afford to spend this much money, especially the time when I am literally converting my Indian rupees in the Canadian dollars, and that was kind of hitting me hard that, okay, that's expensive. You know, maybe I can survive two more months, three more months. And I kid you not, I'm similar to you. I came in August and I did not buy my winter boots up until December as well. So I'm very similar to you.
Very, very similar. Yeah. I think I knew the winter was going to be cold, but I didn't think it was going to be this cold. But that was the last time. Since then, I have my winter boots. I actually, you know, you need to pay money to get good things. Like, I got them and I got them almost 10 years ago and they're still good. So it was a good investment.
Another thing, Oscar, I want to talk about is, you know, many people talk about their first car, their first job, you know, their first house, but somewhere they forget to mention the path that they took, the struggle that they have done where... they like finally they were able to afford all these things. But one thing which I absolutely love about your journey is that you have always embraced your struggles, and you have even shared, you know, through your writings and through your articles and your stories that you have written, that and all the hardships that you have gone through and how you have learned from all these, which is amazing. And there were like three things from your journey I would like to discuss, a few points which, you know, you have mentioned that. And the first thing is regarding the work permit situation. And once again, it's very similar to me because I was left with just 3 months of work permit and I was trying to find a job and just running against the clock, just like yourself. And tell me about that time and how were you keeping yourself motivated?
That was really tough. I think in my case was kind of tough because I was let go from my first job right before Christmas time, and I was going to Mexico for Christmas. And it was really stressful because my wife's work permit was tied to my work permit. So if I couldn't find a job in the next 6 months, because I had to renew my work permit in June, if I couldn't find a job, I wouldn't be able to, we wouldn't be able to stay here. Hmm. Like, there was no way to be here. So I started, when we came back from Mexico, it was like early January, I just focused on, I need to get a job. I need to get a job that it's in my field and that I can put through. But back then they had a different NAFTA agreement. And if it was IT, I could just go through it, ask my employer to submit a letter, and then I would pay for it and I would get the work permit. So I needed to get back to IT. Mm-hmm. I couldn't work in human resources, even if I just studied that. It was like, I need to get back to IT. And I need to get back to IT fast. And we know that finding a job is not easy. Especially when you come to a new country with no network. Nobody really knows who I am. And the people who know who I am, they know that I finished a human resources program. They don't know if I can work in IT. Like, I've told them I was an IT project manager, but I mean, they have no, they can't really vouch for me because that's something I told them. And I think my main problem, that my main goal there was just to get the job. And the way that I motivated myself, I've pushed myself as I've never done before. And I think I've ever done it after. Every morning I woke up as early as I could. I made breakfast for me and my wife. I made lunch for my wife so she could take it to work, and I went to the gym. Mm. And then I spent an hour in the gym just trying to get endorphins and everything. After gym, I went back home, and I was home by, let's say, 9:30, showered and everything, and I started looking for a job. So I actually put myself I'm going to look for a job from 9:30 to 5:30 when my wife comes back. Mm. So I went into LinkedIn, I went to I think Indeed or something like that, trying to look for something. I needed to build my network, and it wasn't easy. So I actually went to LinkedIn and said, and I started finding people who worked in IT, or they had similar stories than myself. And I just messaged them randomly, hey, I'm new in the country, I'm trying to get into the field. Can I buy you a coffee?
Yeah.
Something like that. So my day was mostly applying for jobs, tailoring every resume that I was sending to each one of the companies, writing cover letters, and trying to meet with people, usually around lunchtime that they had 30 minutes break, or I don't know, after work quickly at 5, something like that.
Yeah.
I think I was fortunate enough because our first when we got here, we lived downtown. I mean, we still live downtown, but that was the main one. We lived downtown Toronto. So for me, it was very easy to walk around and meet with people. So I didn't have to pay $3 for the subway, which I'd rather not pay it. And I usually try to arrive early so I could get a tea or the cheapest thing in the menu for me. And then when the person came in, someone's like, hey, can I buy you a coffee? Like, no, I'll get it. And they will pay for their own. So that was kind of a trick that I was using, because every dollar, every cent was just going out. There was nothing coming in because I had no job. And I think that routine, forcing myself to work out, then find a job for 8 hours. And then as soon as my wife came home, it was like, okay, I'm done. My mind is tired. My brain is dead. I need to do something fun. So our fun stuff was usually watching TV, playing a game by ourselves or something like that. But I wanted to forget that I was doing that so I could recharge and have energy the next day. And yeah, that was 3 months, January to March. So yeah, that was kind of I never done anything as structured as that in my life before. So yeah, that was, I just thought it was the only way. It was, again, my goal was to stay in Canada. So that I had to do something, and I did it. And I was fortunate enough to find an amazing company that helped me with my status and all that. I stayed with them for 6.5 years, and I cannot thank them enough. They are just the best people. I wouldn't be in Canada without them and with all their support.
Hmm. Yeah. And so that structure that you got yourself into, that did work in your favor, right? And
it did.
Did you still try to implement that in your current years? No.
I think that I should implement it, but I don't really do it. Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's one of those things that when you're stressed and you are like trying to survive, you just do whatever it takes.
Absolutely.
When you are in a more comfortable situation, like you have your job, you have your and now I'm a citizen, so I don't need to worry about that. I think you just lay back a little bit.
Hmm.
It's like, you know what? You cannot live stressed all your life. So those 3 months were really, really stressful for me. And I think that's what I needed.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't put myself in that situation ever again. And I think I would do it again if I had to survive, quote unquote.
Yeah.
But it's not something that I'm not as structured as it appears when you look at those 3 months. Like, I'm more like chaotic in certain ways. It was good. It helped. It helped at the time.
And it was also the time where the virtual coffee chats wasn't a thing. You were doing them physically.
Yeah.
And that definitely takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
But all in all, I think that's a great advice for anybody who is listening, that you do whatever it takes to do. And I think I've mentioned it so many times on the podcast, do the best you can in that certain situation. You know, whatever it is in your control, focus on that, not on something which is not in yours.
Yeah. So
like talk about, you know, your permanent residency situation where you applied once and it got rejected. Tell us mm-hmm. the reason behind that and how did you cope up with that?
So the reason is I applied by myself. I read everything about the application and all that. And I thought I knew how to do it.
Hmm.
But I uploaded our merge certificate. I uploaded the original version in Spanish instead of uploading the translated version in English. It was just a mistake when I was putting all the documents up there. And unfortunately, the immigration agent that got my case, I guess, didn't have any patience for mistakes. So instead of getting back to me and say, hey, you uploaded a different one, can you upload the one? They just rejected the application.
Mm.
And I was devastated. Like I remember I was at work in this company, the name is Horizon.
Yeah.
I was in at the office when I got the email.
Mm.
And I don't know how, it was after 5. I think I was wrapping up and I got the email and was checking because there was not a lot of people around. And I don't know what face I made because one of my colleagues was passing by and she was like, everything looks okay. And I just turned around, it's like, I got rejected for my permanent residency.
Hmm.
And she's like, give me a minute. And she called the CEO, like was my boss, the CEO, and say, hey, Oscar just got rejected. Then she called me back and say, hey, don't you worry. We're going to hire a lawyer for you and mm-hmm. we're going to help you with the whole process.
Oh, wow.
So, like I said, I wouldn't be here without them. It's just they didn't have to.
Mm.
I mean, of course, like I have been working with them for 3 years back then, but they really didn't have the obligation to do all this for me. And they did. It was just, it was kind of one of those moments that just humbles you that there's so many people that want to help. And I was lucky to find them.
That's incredible. You do come across some people in your life which definitely leaves you in awe that, like you said, they were not obligated to do it, but they just did it to help you.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Okay. And obviously, let's just talk about that, why frozen pizza tasted better than any pizza at one point in your journey. Tell me about that.
So when we moved here, I mean, we were living on saves. We didn't have any money. So for our kind of like Friday or weekend night, like after work and after school, in my case, and my wife at work, we used to turn on Netflix and watch The Office.
Hmm.
And it was so fun because we, in our way home, we stopped by the grocery store and we bought like frozen pizza. We put it in the oven and then we ate pizza watching The Office. It was kind of like our date night. And and that's what I'm saying, like it tasted better than anything else. Just because what it meant. It meant that it was kind of a treat that we were giving to ourselves. I don't eat frozen pizza anymore, but but at the time it was amazing. Just tasted great.
I bet, you know, with that's just $5-6 you get to eat the full pizza. Yeah. Definitely it would be good.
Yeah, exactly. And I think back then it was cheaper than that. It was maybe $3-4. Like yeah. We also got like some lasagna, like frozen lasagna. Yeah. It was terrible, lasagna, but it was like a $1 each. So sometimes like, hey, you want like another treat? Like, let's do frozen pizza and frozen lasagna. And then we paid, let's say, $5-6 for everything. And we went home and that was our meal. So it was kind of like a treat to ourselves. We didn't have to cook. We didn't have to do anything. We just put it in the oven and then we just waited. We watched The Office and had fun. It was our date night.
So tell me, how do you feel about your whole journey so far, you know, like to the point where you went to the bank and this person said that, I don't make any rules here, but with your energy and enthusiasm, I'm sure you'll make it. From that point to up until today, and including this journey of managing budgets and, you know, figuring out and navigating life, finding the job and living on tighter deadlines and everything. So what do you think it has made you today? Tell me about that.
I feel that the journey is over. The reason why I'm saying this is because now that I got a citizenship, I have like a stable job that I really like. I mean, that happened before as well, but this one is more like, I feel that I got into another comfort zone in my life after 10 years of struggles. And I think that journey changed me in so many ways. It showed me how to appreciate the smaller things. Like I said, like frozen pizza or watching The Office. And even now, like I listen to the theme of The Office, the intro theme. And I like sometimes I get emotional just by listening to it. Because I think it showed me that all the things I thought I needed, I didn't really need. I needed some stability. I needed my wife. I needed my friends. My family, and that's what it's important.
Absolutely.
So all the things that at some point I chased, like designer clothes or having a sports car, all those things, I don't really care about them anymore. It's more, I value the people that I interact with. I value my relationships more than anything else.
Yeah.
So I think it changed me a lot in that way.
Sounds very inspiring. Thank you for sharing everything there. And you know, for I was just thinking about it when you were just talking, that for me, it's the theme music of the show, How I Met Your Mother. Because it was, I think I started just before the pandemic and I was figuring out my job and work permit, everything. That was like my escape at that time. I remember now.
Yeah. I think there's always one. I was talking to a friend that at work and she moved to Canada as well. And she, when I talked about the office, she messaged me like, hey, my show for me was Arrested Development. And I think there's always one that you tie to that. And it's funny because I just rewatched the whole Office, like all the seasons.
Okay.
And I still feel it. I still get emotional. I still remember those days. And
the nostalgia.
I think it grounds you in a way. It's like, yeah, you might be comfortable today, but don't forget the last 10 years. Don't forget the first 2-3 years in Canada. Like, you always need to understand that even though I'm privileged enough to be where I am, there's so many people who are struggling in the same way we did. So if there's anything I can do to help, I will do it. That's actually why I started the other podcast. Like, I wanted to share stories and hopefully people could start expanding their network, because I thought like, hey, if I bring people to the podcast and someone is listening that is just arriving to the country, they will have an excuse to reach out to this person.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I saw you, I heard you in this podcast and you work in the same field that I want to work. do you mind connecting? So I wanted to do that. It was my way to give back to the community in a way that I was okay doing. Like a podcast, you can record it anytime. You can do it in your free time and all that. Yeah. So after a lot of ideas, I landed in that. And I think it was kind of the way, like if I felt that way, I'm not alone. Like we all felt that way. There was maybe not the exact way because every person is different, but there's some struggle happening. And if there's anything we can do to help, I mean, let's do it.
Yeah. And you said that you have stopped making it now, but I have to like mention it to you and to my listeners as well that your podcast was like a reference point for me, you know, when I was researching about it, you know, the way you were talking and the stories you were bringing on, you know, or just the conversations you were having. You know, I was always up for learning about new people in general. I'm a very curious person. So that was a great reference point for me. And the episodes are still out there for listeners to listen. So share with us that where they can find it and also about your second podcast, where they can find that.
So I don't know if the first podcast is still out there. I think it might still be there in the podcast apps. But like even I stopped paying for the website and everything. So that one you might be able to find it in podcast apps. The new one is it's mostly a YouTube channel. So it's called Why We Write Fantasy, and it's there. There's a podcast version that you can find on any podcast app, but we're trying to focus our we're gonna know that our audience is in YouTube a lot, so we wanted to do that. So yeah, if someone wants to listen to it and see our faces, then you go to YouTube. If you don't want to see our faces, then just go to the other one. There's nothing really exciting happening in the video, okay. So. Getting the audio version is fine.
Okay, so to all my listeners, the links to check out the podcasts and to reach out to Oscar, the links can be found in the show notes. Okay, so Oscar, let's just get into the final segment of the podcast. I call it Beneath the Accent. I'm going to ask a couple of questions. You can answer them in one word or a sentence or however you feel like. The idea is just to know more about Oscar. So ready?
Yes, let's go.
What is one habit you adopted that has changed your life?
I would say writing every day. That has changed my life. Even though I don't write, not every day I write about my novel or whatever I'm writing. Sometimes I just write random things. I think it helped me to calm down and relax and don't feel stressed and in a rush every day.
What's the best advice someone ever gave you?
I've received so many advice. There's so many good ones. I think the best one was it's okay to ask for help. I think that would be the best one that I got, because I would have never received all the other advices if I wasn't feeling that asking for help was okay. And especially like growing up again in a very patriarchal society. You know, the idea like boys don't cry, like you can do everything yourself. You don't need to be strong all the time. Finding that it's okay to open up and say, hey, I need help. And that actually happened a lot with my job search and all that, like reaching out to all the people. It's a very vulnerable position where you're putting yourself in. Even with new friends, like you're going out, it's like, hey, I want to be your friend. I'm 35 and I want to be your friend. Like it's a very vulnerable position, but everybody is in the same place sometimes. So if you just happen to connect at the same time, then it's great. So I would say the best advice for me is just it's okay. Nobody's going to think less of you if you ask for help.
Any worst advice someone ever gave you?
I can mention a lot of my Mexican bosses. I think there's bad, especially like I'm thinking about like moving to Canada. I think the worst advice for me, and again, this is me who likes to, I wanted to push myself and do other things. But the worst advice for me was to find my Mexican community when I moved in. Because I think if I had done that, I would just move from one comfort zone to another. I would be speaking Spanish all the time. All my friends would speak Spanish. And I think that would be really bad for me. It might be great for someone else, especially if you're homesick or you actually need that connection with the language. But for in my case, that I just wanted to move as fast as possible, understand the culture, blend into the culture, learn the language. For me, it was a really bad advice. Yeah. But again, it's me. It's the way I am.
Okay. Is there something you recently bought and you now regret?
Maybe the car.
What? Why?
So we bought a car during... We live downtown Toronto, so there's no need to have a car here. We bought one when COVID started and all that. We weren't able to travel. Like, my wife and I like to travel like one or twice a year. But with COVID, there was no option to travel. And you couldn't even take the train because, again, you're like risking getting sick with some people around. Mm-hmm. So we bought a car and we used it for the time. But now that things are getting back to normal, and you can take the public transit and everything, our car is mostly parked downstairs. I would say maybe we use it like once or twice a month.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't buy that much stuff. And usually the things that I buy are books or video games. And I usually consume them and don't really regret buying those. But I think the car was, it was just a lot of money. So, yeah.
Is there something which is like the most expensive thing you would like to own?
I think my home. Like, I mean, we're paying for this one, but still, we still have the mortgage. So I think once the mortgage is done, I would be super happy.
So what's next on your bucket list?
I think traveling to Japan is the thing. So my family on my mom's side comes from Japan. So, but I've never been there.
Are there any movies that you like to watch over and over again?
Yes, I do. I'm a huge sci-fi and fantasy fan. So I can think Star Wars is one, like especially the first three, like the ones that came out in the 70s, early 80s.
Yeah,
because that kind of like forged my childhood. The Godfather is another one that I really like to watch over and over again. Blade Runner, Terminator, Jurassic Park. Like, honestly, anything that is sci-fi-ish, I'm going to be watching. Even like TV shows as well. Like anything, anything that it's like, just take me away, take me to a different world for a few hours, and I'll rewatch it.
So who's your go-to person when you feel stuck?
My wife, for sure. She can give me like very, very different perspectives on the things that I'm thinking.
So if you could have one superpower, what would it be?
Mind control.
Okay.
100%, yeah.
So describe Canada in one word or a sentence.
I think I would describe it as embracing. I find the culture very open to different ideas, different cultures, like outside cultures, different people, like as we're saying, different accents. And I think the weather is so harsh here that, I mean, we rely on getting people from other countries. So that wouldn't work if the culture wasn't as embracing as it is.
Yeah, great answer. If you could leave me with one piece of advice about podcasting, what would it be?
About podcasting?
Yeah.
Don't look at the numbers, I would say. When I started the other podcast, I remember like getting maybe 100 listens a month. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning was very discouraging, but it just takes time. So don't look at the numbers. Just keep going. Whatever you like to do, just go ahead.
And finally, if you could leave me with one piece of advice in general, what would it be?
I would say keep an open mind for anything. As I said, like I leave through, I know I'm usually a person who kind of like plays with the cards I've dealt with. If something random comes up, you just pick it up and keep going. That's kind of what I do. And you cannot do that if you don't have an open mind, because things change all the time. So
yeah,
just keep an open mind on even the things that you don't understand or you don't like. The fact, like I was saying, like the worst advice that we were saying, like the fact that it was worst for me doesn't mean that it's worst for somebody else. So things that work for me might not work for you, and things that work for you might not work for me. But if we understand them and we understand their differences, it will just make us happier and less stressed. So yeah, open mind for sure.
Loved it. Thank you. Thanks a lot, Oscar, for the advice and for being on the podcast and adding value to my listeners. Thank you.
No, thank you very much for inviting me, Gurusis. Gurusis, did I pronounce it correctly? Gurusis?
Yes.
Okay. Made it. No, thank you for inviting me. This was really fun. I love what you're doing, and I'm a new fan of your show.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Means a lot.
Thank you.
Hey, listener. Thank you for making it to the end. I highly, highly appreciate you listening to the podcast. Subscribe to the podcast if you haven't as yet. And please share with your friends or anybody you think would like it. And like I always say, we encourage you to follow your heart, but also us on Instagram. The handle is mythickaccent. You can also leave us a review or write to us at hello@mythickaccent.com. So stay tuned and let's continue knowing each other beneath the accent.